hate being up here. I'm Betsy. I'm an alcoholic. My sobriety date is July 13th, 2008. I have a sponsor, and I have the privilege of sponsoring others. Okay. The person I have picked tonight has made an impact in my life in general. Sorry. He's who helped me get sober. He works a solid program. And when I hear him speak, I'm like, shit, why can't I be like that? And I don't know, I just love him. So without further ado, here's my husband, Ian.
I am scared shitless. Hi, my name's Ian. I am an alcoholic. My sobriety date is December 26, 2007. I have a sponsor and I sponsor others, and YPG is my home group. What was like, what happened, what it's like now? Had a normal childhood. I was adopted. That's normal, right? Okay. Loving family. I was an only child till the age of six. Then my parents adopted a little girl named Hollis, who's my sister. See, normal childhood growing up, we did a lot of things as a family together. I was a good kid, but I was a handful. ADHD, I guess. So I could climb any tree I wanted to and just hang upside down and scare the crap out of my mother. You can ask my in-laws now. I'm still a handful, and they love me every bit, I hope. I see them back there. Hey, you're shaking your head. I see you. But I don't know. Growing up, I was a good kid. I was good in school. I always applied myself till I got to middle school. Then I kind of slacked off. Had my first drink at the age of 12. It was Backwash Red Dog. Yeah. I think it was 90% spit. But it was warm and it tasted like crap. And that was pretty much my first drink. And it was nothing special whatsoever. But then I was hooked. My mother was an avid wine drinker, and every night she'd have a nice little glass of wine, and I'd always sneak drinks. I had red wine, white wine, any kind of champagne. It was always at the house. And I just snuck sips for until the age of 16 or 17 when I had my first drunk, raspberry wine coolers. I was doing it big. I like the bitch beers, what can I say? I had 4 out of 6, got totally buzzed and was in love with it. I liked the way it made me feel. I liked the way it calmed me down. I wouldn't talk so fast. I wouldn't piss people off. People wouldn't throw stuff at me to shut me up. I became a cool guy, you know. People liked hanging around with me when I was drunk. I had this uncanny ability to become a chameleon and turn into any surrounding, you know, vicinity that was around me and act just like everybody else. Without the drug or without the alcohol, I could not do that. It was just to fit in, just like Corey. I had to fit in. I had to be a part of, you know. Let's see. High school was normal. I didn't really party too much in high school. I was too scared. But I would drink on the weekends by myself sometimes. Whenever I could find the alcoholic substance, because I never had the money, or I could find the right bodega to get it from. My dad had a collection of wine. I would sneak into that, steal the Vespa scooter we had in our backyard with a flathead screwdriver because I was so drunk. Instead of using the key to start it, I had to use a flathead screwdriver. And then have the throttle cable break in the ghetto. Little white kid in the ghetto with a Vespa scooter. Good deal. that was crazy. Let's see. Partying didn't really, you know, take off for me until I got out of high school. I moved in with my father. My parents got divorced right before high school. Then I was back and forth between my mother and father. That didn't really bog me that much because I still had my loving parents. I wasn't with, they weren't together anymore, but they were still the same person, just separate. I was mostly there for my little sister, who was dealing a rough time with it because she didn't really understand much of what was going on. Let's see. Got out of high school, tried college for one class, and said, F this. Started working for my father at night from 12 o'clock till 12 in the afternoon. 12 o'clock in the morning till 12 noon. Selling produce, going all over Florida, delivering stuff. I worked and slept and then worked and slept, and that was mostly the deal until I got fired from that job because I couldn't wake up. Which seems to be a recurring trend with me and jobs. I can't wake up for them. I can't wake up for life. But with AA, I'm slowly learning how to do that. Let's see. I got a job at Target working night shift. I could wake up for that because I started at 10, and I just had to work at 10 and then go to bed because I was dead tired because I stayed awake for 24 hours beforehand. Let's see, I'd work all week, and then I got in contact with an old friend from high school, and he had a party house out in St. Pete. And we'd go over there and party. And I remember the first time I got in contact with him, he had a Mustang back in high school when I was in love with it. He had a black Mustang, 5-speed. It was sick. I loved that car. Plus, I had a black Camaro, and he'd always beat my ass, so I felt really bad. I bought a Mustang myself because I always wanted one. And the first thing I did when I met up with him is we street raced. And we were going down Himes at 55 miles an hour after we had raced and gone up to probably about 120 right after, I guess it was MLK. We're cruising down. We just passed Cypress. We get pulled over for street racing. Got arrested on the spot, signed out on our recognizance by a thumbprint. And the only thing we could think of doing was going to St. Pete. So we dumped his car at his house, took mine, got plastered. Ended up wrestling while we were there because we thought we were hot shit because we got arrested for street racing and got off, we thought, so far. And we started putting holes in walls with our heads because we kept grabbing each other, throwing each other across the room. Thought that was fun. The guy who owned the apartment didn't. So we had to pull up, you know, a newspaper and stick it in the hole and try to plaster it up with whatever we could find that looked white. which quickly became a poster. And I don't know, it's funny, that the person in the room I became really good friends with, and he comes into play in my story a little bit later. After that, I got a girlfriend. I had a couple in high school. I got to go back to this. This is how crazy I was when I was drinking and smoking weed in high school. I didn't do it that often, but when I did it, I became a crazy person. I would do the stupidest stuff, the craziest stuff. This girl was cheating on me. I found out. I confronted her after I followed her to the boyfriend's house after she left mine, and then proceeded to confront her and him and stick a knife to his throat and tell him I was going to kill him. That didn't work out too well. Old people drove by, I freaked out, hopped in my car, they left, I followed them, I tried rear-ending them several times, put a cigarette on my arm, and told them I was going to kill them if I ever saw them again. Yeah, normal stuff. Apparently I have a temper. I can be really crazy, but then I can get really crazy angry. I black out when I get angry, and that's one thing I have to work on in AA, and I've been doing that for a while now. But to get back onto the story, didn't see her or him again. Kind of just went home and felt suicidal for a little bit. Then I found a beer, started drinking that, and I started feeling better. Called a buddy, went to a party, middle of the day, and then everything went back to normal. Got on the PS2 and played Grand Theft Auto like everybody else was doing. Started killing people on there because it felt right. But let me see. After that, let's see. I was engaged to a girl when I was working at Target. I thought she was the one. I thought she was the one because I saw the relationship was going nowhere, and the only way to continue it was to get engaged. Wonderful idea. She broke up with me about a month or two after that. Let's see. After that, I just was pretty much partying still on the weekend. I'd work all week, sleep all day, and then I'd be awake to eat and work, and that was it until the Saturday came, and then I'd blow my entire paycheck on beer. At my buddy's apartment in St. Pete, we'd line the walls with, you know, turkey, with the Canadian. We had so many bottles you couldn't imagine. We could build little structures out of them. We'd build forts. We'd tackle them just to watch them crumble. Goofy stuff. But after that whole incident with the breaking up with the fiance, I just went about my stuff and thought about going back to school. Never really got enough guts to do it. Let's see. After that, right after that, I started hanging out with a brother. Her brother was a drug dealer. He had just gotten out of jail, and he needed to get back on the streets, and I was bored, so I said, let's do this. So we got some stuff, outside substance. It's white. I think y'all know what it is. Started selling that. Got really crazy. Found out that I couldn't sell unless I was totally hammered, because then I could be the ghettoest white boy you've ever seen. All the black guys looked at me like I was crazy. And granted, I was. It's kind of funny how that happened. We'd sit on the street corner. I had gotten a hold of my dad's guns, a 357 revolver and a 380 handgun. I knew his combination to his safe, so I took them without asking him. Proceeded to carry those with us whenever we went out dealing and selling. This is where it got kind of scary. We were dealing stuff. He'd always get crazy because he'd do half the drugs we got, and he'd start waving guns around everywhere. He'd think there was DEA up in like a parking garage, and he'd stand in the middle of the street pointing a gun at it. I thought that was normal and funny, so we had a good time with that. There was not much fazed me when I was drunk, you know. It was just like, yeah, let's keep going. What else are we going to do, you know? I tried doing the outside substance, and never really had an effect on me because I was ADHD and I was prescribed Dexedrine half my life. So it never really did anything for me. They looked at me like I was crazy because I just kept doing it. And I'm like, what's supposed to happen? There's nothing happening, you know. Give me a beer. This is boring, you know. We ended up going down to re-up, get some more stuff down in Green Street Projects. And it's kind of funny, my wife was in the apartment because she was buddies with the guy. I didn't know that at the time. We didn't know each other. We were around each other. But he was a cool guy, big dude. Someone I didn't really want to talk to. but my buddy, my friend, he went inside, got the stuff, and then he came up to me and said he had to go do something around the corner. Figured he was going to make some money. So he ran around the corner, and I see him running back. And I'm like, what happened? He said, this guy tried robbing me. And I said, oh, crap, let's get out of here. You know, he had the gun, I had the gun. I pull out, and I get a .22 pistol put in my forehead by a black guy. He was very angry. Thank God I had my gun in my door. So I put my revolver to his chin. My buddy put the .380 to his forehead and said, let's do this. Let's see who pulls off the trigger first. That scared the crap out of me. Of course, he ran away. But by the time he turned the corner to get out of there, because it was in a little square parking complex where the house was at, he had found 15 or so people, which amazed me because I never saw any of them. This is where it gets a little more crazy. I realized he didn't have any bullets in the gun because he picked up a giant brick and chucked it at my car. But since I was so drunk, he hit my car, and it was fresh. There was no dents or nothing on it. It was my baby. He dented it. I looked at my buddy, and I said, that's fucked up. Pardon the language, everybody. I pulled out .357. I pointed at him, and I pulled the trigger. By the grace of God, I only grazed him. Immediately, we hauled ass home to my house, where he was all hopped up off of what just happened, me pulling the trigger. And when I pulled the trigger and shot the guy, he put the gun, the .380, over the roof of the car, popped out two rounds, and they all scattered. The one guy fell to the ground, got back up. Thank God I saw that, and holding his shoulder. It was a little flesh wound, come to find out from another guy from the drug dealer in the area, told me the next day. That scared the crap out of me. We took one of the guns and ditched it in Gandy Bay, went back to my house. My buddy had the other gun, and the newspaper lady was driving by. He was so high on an outside substance that he looked at her, pointed the gun at her, started screaming. And granted, this is all in front of my father's house. My father, thank God, had already left for work. She called the cops. The cops arrived at the house. He hid the gun underneath my bed in my room. He acted like he was asleep, and I answered the door like a dumbass, but it was the right thing to do. I wasn't knowing what to do after that. I was so freaked out. I was sobering up. There was no more beer. I answered the door. The lady is out there. Come to find out, her I think it was 9-year-old daughter was riding with her when he pointed the gun at her, delivering newspapers at 4 o'clock in the morning. She said it was me. Instantly, I started crying. I was scared shitless. I did fill my pants. it was my word against hers. And I brought everybody else that was out in the house out, and we all had similar stories, thank God, because we brainstormed a little. I let them search the house. He didn't look underneath the bed, but he did see my giant hookah in the middle of my bedroom. And thank God he didn't check the bowl. Let's see. After that scared me shitless, and I didn't want to deal anymore. I quit doing that and started working my ass off. I dropped all that. My dad didn't know what happened to his gun. I told him it was stolen, I guess. He knew something else happened. I actually made amends to him about 8 months ago about the whole thing. Let's see. After that, I continued working at Target, doing night stock. I was quite proficient at that. They gave me electronics, and I could do a 24-hour workload in 4 hours, and they liked that. Of course, I had to sneak in drinks here and there. Then I met my wife. It's kind of an interesting story. I had a friend of mine move in with me. The old friend who was dealing got arrested for something else and went to prison. I met an old friend from school who I hung out as acquaintance. He needed a place to stay. I said, let's chill at my house. You know, I wasn't feeling too safe by myself at that time. We became close. We became buddies, even more so than we were in high school. Let's see. And he was hanging out with my wife at the time with his girlfriend. And we kind of hit it off because went to prom with my ex, and I met her there. My ex didn't want to hang out afterwards, so she went home. My wife came back to my house, and she provided an outside substance that was on paper. And that seemed like a good idea. So we did that, and we started acting crazy and having a good time. And I don't know, there's a slight spark that kindled there, I think. who knows? But nothing really happened. Went back to working, didn't really see her for another couple months. And then she came back around again, and this is when I found my partner in crime. Outside substances, alcohol, you name it. We did it together. We just kind of complemented each other in it. I mean, where I lacked, she picked up, and where I picked up, she lacked, and it was an ongoing party. Let's see. I'm skipping around now. I don't really want to talk too much about what happened with that, but it got worse. We started making some serious money. I got involved with her family's business. And I started getting a really nice paycheck working regular hours. And I proceeded to make twice as much as what I was making before and blowing twice as much every weekend when I got home. An outside substance that comes in many different colors and pill form became a very dominant player in my day-to-day affairs, as well as nitrous oxide. I could buy a box of 24, 10 of those, and do them in one night. Whatever slowed me down made me feel good. Did a lot of that. Come to find out, my wife was adopted too. Found out that her biological aunt is my ex-fiance. I want to think about that for a second. I wanted to go Jerry Springer. I've been with her aunts. yeah, it's kind of awkward, but it's a funny story. My whole excuse is I found the right genes out of the whole pool, and I stuck with those. The other two were really crazy. This one's more normal, I think. No, but it came down to, this is one very pivotal moment, and I got the final time of us using together with that outside substance and drinking was a night that she blacked out, hit her head in the stove, and forgot everything, who I was, where she was, anything. I had to suck it up and call her parents and tell her everything. Because her parents are in the medical field, they know a lot about what's going on. I had to explain everything to them, to my sister-in-law, to my brother-in-law, who I love them more than anything, that I had bought over $200 worth of ecstasy, about $150 worth of nitrous oxide, a little bit of GHB, and I think there was some cocaine involved too. And I explained to them everything that we did and how much we did and the timeline that we did it in. Took my wife to the hospital to get checked out. And they found out that it would slowly come back. It was just a bump. And thank God it was just from the combination of drugs that she lost her memory. That pretty much killed it for me. We went to our first AA meeting after that, being forced by family members. We weren't ready to quit. We went to shut them up and to get back to what we were doing. Let's see. Went to Yana. I think it was the 7:30 Yana. Noon Yana? 5:45 Yana. Whole bunch of old people in there. Didn't really relate, but I made the mistake of listening, and that ruined it for me. Because, like I've been hearing here, if you listen once and you hear something from somebody and you relate to it, it messes up everything. I could never feel the same effect again. I just felt like crap because I knew what I was doing to myself. And I didn't want to be doing it, but I was addicted. I had that phenomenon of craving that I couldn't control, especially with what I was doing. I wasn't working a program. I wasn't being honest with myself. I wasn't being honest with my wife. I wasn't being honest with my family. Let's see. 6 months went by. I developed a massive resentment towards the drugs and alcohol. So pretty much dry drunk from hell. Hi, here I am. Boiled down to 6 months after me quitting, my wife would be sleeping all day, and I didn't know what was going on. I had an idea. She comes home one morning at 7:30 after I called her because I was working on the house and she was supposed to be helping. I didn't know where she was. She said she was with some friends. I knew that was bullshit. She came home, didn't say hi to me, ran straight inside and passed out on the couch. I was livid. I grabbed her phone, found some guys' phone numbers I did not recognize, called them up, said, "Hey girl, what's up?" And that was it. I was off to the races. I woke her up. Of course, she was coming down off of heroin, cocaine, and some other substances. Was not a good mix with a dry drunk and someone coming off of that, I can tell you now. I took her cell phone, looked at her, and said, "You're a piece of shit." Smashed her cell phone on the floor, picked it up, threw it at her face, hit her in the nose with it, made her nose bleed. I was beside myself. She was beside herself, and she got violent, and I got violent, and I put my hands on my wife. That was something I never said I would ever do. But I found out from being a dry drunk that you do some of the dumbest stuff. I did some of the dumbest stuff that I could ever imagine. That was a big thing for me. We got into a little fist throwing action inside the house. I stormed off. I went for a drive real quick, went straight to her parents' house and told her dad that he needs to knock me out right now because I put my hands on his daughter and she's bleeding on the floor at our house. I apparently had blacked out. I didn't remember half the stuff that I did. But apparently I held her by her chest up against the wall. And she remembered everything. And when she called the cops, she wrote down a report. And they came to my in-law's house where I was at with my father-in-law and my mother-in-law. And I was in tears, shaking. I didn't know what to do. And I asked them. The cop showed up. I said, what are we doing? You know, and he says, "Well, she filled out a report. Do you want to fill out a report?" I said, "I don't need to fill out a report. What does her report say?" He read it off, and I said, "Yeah, that's it." I was really willing and able to take whatever I deserved for that. I never felt more or less than a man in my entire life than that day. I went to jail for 24 hours. I was in constant contact with my in-laws and my father. I mostly talk about my in-laws because they were mostly the ones that were around all the drinking and drugging. My dad was only a byproduct for a little bit before I moved out of the house. My mother didn't really know. She found out that I was an alcoholic about a year ago. I had hinted a lot about it, but I never really full on told her because I didn't think she'd understand. But she does, and that surprised me a big deal. Back to where I was at. It was probably, I think, $1,000 or so to get me out. Because come to find out, if you hold someone by their chest, anywhere around their throat, that is a felony. It is attempted strangulation. I had to get a lawyer. I had to find out if my wife and I were meant to stay together. That was really rough. I didn't know what to do. I don't know why I didn't drink, but I called my dad. He picked me up from the hospital, from Falkenberg, Orient. Sorry, wrong one. He picked me up, went straight home. I was in shambles. I didn't know what was to become of my relationship with my wife or my family, anything. My in-laws found out that Beth, my wife was under the influence of several different things. That old buddy of mine was the main contributor who lived with me for a short period, who supplied everything and was actually trying to get with her. Luckily, nothing happened. Through court proceedings and stuff like that, through my lawyer, I was able to get messages to my wife. I was court ordered to have no contact whatsoever. Couldn't call, couldn't see, couldn't come in with any distance of her whatsoever for a month until my court date. I listened for about 3 days. I was passing messages through her mother. Just stuff like that. And I think after about a week or two, I had enough and I couldn't resist it. And I had to go by the house. I had to go back to where it all happened. I had to see her. I had to talk to her. We had both made messages clear that we wanted to continue our relationship and that she was going to go to rehab and I was going to go to domestic violence courses. Whether it was court ordered or not, I needed to do that for myself and for my fellows around me. I drove by the house once, the lights were off. Drove by the house a second time, the lights were on in the living room. Thought nothing of it. I waited for 2 seconds and then started driving away. She doesn't know it, but I saw in my rearview mirror, I saw her jump outside the house. So I drove around the block, and I came pulling up behind her, and she was in tears. I was in tears. We kissed. We made pretty much a quick un-AA amends to each other right there, and that we had to keep doing what we were doing and stay separate for now so that nothing greater could be put on us. Going back, I was a dry drunk. She got into the program hard. I lived through her. I never worked the steps for my first 2 years. I was white-knuckling it like you wouldn't believe. And it got bad enough to where I was seeing so much progress in my significant other that it finally pushed me, like, why am I just sitting here idle when I could be doing something with my life and getting better and not feeling like complete shit every damn day? Pardon the language. It came down to where I was looking for the gun and the bullet. And it just clicked to me. Get a damn sponsor. God smacked me on the back of the head. It's time to get real. I had one prospect in mind. Didn't feel it was right at the time. And a name just popped in my head. And I called him. He said, yeah, let's do it. When do you want to meet up? I said, ASAP. That weekend I met at his... I think it was that weekend or the following weekend I met at his house. Did the first 3 steps. How much time do I have? Okay. First 3 steps. Boom, boom, boom. This is where it gets tough. A good friend of mine, let me tell you this. Middle of third step prayer, I heard a phone call, the phone ring from my wife's cell phone, in the middle of prayer, and I just blew it off. I was doing my prayer. I needed to focus on that. After my prayer, I went downstairs. I asked what happened, who called, because I thought it was probably the family. Come to find out, it was a good friend of mine who I partied hard with every weekend. Partied just like I did. Same age. I think he was about a year younger. Good kid. This made me cry. Come to find out, he had 24 hours to live. He overdosed on cocaine. He was shooting it up. Not a day goes by that I don't wish I could go back, start this thing sooner, and get to him. I went to his funeral, ran to his old girlfriend there, my wife and I. She thought we were dead because she knew how we partied. And she was just drinking. She quit all the hard stuff. That was rough. And I think a week after that, I stumbled across a picture of him that was at our house. And that really broke me up inside. I I can't take for granted the gifts we have in here. The second chance of life that we all have. The simplicity of this program. Finding a higher power. Helping your fellows. Finding that next drunk that wants to get sober. You know, that fellow alcoholic that's still out there in that war with himself. That's dying inside. And bringing him this message. Helping him find a higher power. Showing him the fellowship. But now that I have AA, I have all you, my second family, people that I can call on any time of day or night to get me out of my shit, because I can put myself there real quick when I take my will back and when I don't pray for that morning and I want to handle it myself and see exactly what I can do again to myself and everybody around me. Through the grace of God in this program, my marriage has been saved. My life has been saved. I have a relationship now with my in-laws that I wouldn't change for anything. I have a relationship now with my sister-in-law and my brother-in-law, who I consider my brother that I never had. And I don't know. I wouldn't change a damn thing for the world. I love all of you. Thank you for my sobriety.
Thank you, Ian. I've asked Jen to read Dr. Bob's last message. Hey, everybody. I'm Jen. I'm an alcoholic. This is Dr. Bob's last message delivered at the first International Conference of Alcoholics Anonymous at Cleveland, Ohio in 1950. Excuse me. I get a big thrill out of looking over a vast sea of faces like this with a feeling that possibly some small thing I did a number of years ago played an infinitely small part in making this meeting possible. I also get quite a thrill when I think that we all had the same problem. We all did the same things. We all get the same results in proportion to our zeal and enthusiasm and stick-to-itiveness. If you will pardon the injection of a personal note at this time, let me say that I've been in bed 5 of the last 7 months and my strength has not returned as I would like, so my marks of necessity will be very brief. But there are 2 or 3 things that flashed into my mind on which it would be fitting to lay a little emphasis. One is the simplicity of our program. Let's not louse it all up with Freudian complexes and things that are interesting to the scientific mind but has very little to do with our actual AA work. Our 12 steps, when simmered down to the last, resolve themselves into the words love and service. We understand what love is and we understand what service is. So let's bear those 2 things in mind. Let us also remember to guard that erring member, the tongue. And if we must use it, let's use it with kindness and consideration and tolerance. And one more thing. None of us would be here today if somebody hadn't taken the time to explain things to us, to give us a little pat on the back, to take us to a meeting or two, to have done numerous little kind and thoughtful acts on our behalf. So let us never get the degree of smug complacency that we're not willing to extend or attempt to help that which has been so beneficial to us. To our less fortunate brothers, thank you very much.